Token Smart Podcast, got an extra special episode coming up for you guys. Really, really excited when Whale Shark and Jim hit me out of the blue and they were like, yo, we want to hop on a podcast with you. And so, of course, I was like, hell yeah. And so here we are. So welcome, Jim and Whale Shark. And we're going to talk about the current state of NFT land and how to deal with the hordes of masses and all the people flocking into the space. Particularly, Whale Shark, your like whole community is essentially flooding everywhere and like, you know, overloading our servers and everything. So you got to figure out some way to cope with all of the madness going on, and no better people to talk about it than these two folks right here. So shit, man, Whale Shark, dude, last time I had you on this podcast, your whale coin had just come out. And that was like all the buzz, but it was like essentially, I feel like it was released like a couple days or like right before we met, and it was just in its infancy. And I was like, I don't really want to talk about your fucking coin, man. It's like all over the place and I can't even escape it. And now my destiny is intertwined with it. So I'm like, I guess we got to talk about that shit because it's some of the most exciting stuff going on right now. And yeah, really interested to hear both of your guys' perspectives because I feel like everyone who I've talked to in the past couple weeks or so is basically on the same page and saying the same thing, that NFT land is popping off and this stuff is about to ramp up significantly right now. So help me, y'all. You guys are the big fish in here. I'm just a hanging out with you guys. What do we do?
Dude, thanks for having me back on again. And you know, once again, I think it's amazing that that finally I get to share a podcast with two of the most vocal and famous voices in the space. You're absolutely right. When you and I had that first conversation, I think we had just released, you know, prices and everything. But talking price wise, we were trending around 20 or 30 cents. In terms of the community size, we were really looking at about 300 active users, you know, on the Discord, online users every single day. And you know, I think we were very fortunate, as all three of us are, to have been in the space, you know, right place, right time, right project. And you know, now we're trending at about, I think we're the 170th largest coin in the space at about roughly anywhere between $9 to $10, given how good the day is. And we are actually quickly approaching 3,000 members on our Discord. So you know, the growth has been epically quick. The adjustments needed to grow the project within the community itself have also been extremely quick. And you know, I think that this growth, at least from what I've been experiencing, has just been over the last, I want to say, the last 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah. If this is a growth of 2 to 3 weeks, what does the growth of the next 2 to 3 months look like? You know, so I'm thrilled to be here with both of you. You know, I learned a lot from the podcast that you and Matthew did, as well as learned a lot from Jim when I first started the space. Thank you for Jim for introducing me to Joyz, as well as many other fantastic projects.
Thanks, man. Dude, it's been so good getting to know you two over the last like 8 or 9 months. I was just trying to remember like exactly when we first like encountered each other in NFT land. It was definitely over a bid over something of art or something. I'm unable to find it because I'm pretty sure it's not in my collection. I'm pretty sure I probably lost because when Whale Shark wants to use wins. But I think my answer to Rizzle is like, you know, we just need to strap on tight because we're on the rocket ship and we're heading into the stratosphere. Not talking about like Moon Boy and Mars stuff, but more about like the trajectory of the space we're in, of NFTs in general and digital assets. I think that we're starting to wake up the rest of the world to what we're up to, and a lot of people still don't understand it. We've got the right click and save meme that's come on strong in the last week. But that's okay. I mean, the first thing they have to do is overcome the objections that they have internally, and obviously right click and save is a really big one that none of us really focus on because we all understand what the technology does. But yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to get on here today and to just kind of shoot the shit with Whale Shark. Him and I do talk quite a bit. I've helped with the Whale community. We're the chief technical partners, me and Nate, and we're helping him build out like the automation around the liquidity mining payouts and things like that and other areas, and really ready to help expand the Whale community into the next phase once the DAO systems and things like that come along to a point where Whale Shark's ready to implement these. But really, go ahead.
Exactly, dude. I would not have had the balls to do this if I hadn't had your support in March of this year, right? I think that's when you and I started talking about saying, hey, is it possible to take this collection that I put together and make it something better? And I remember your words were, hell yeah, let's just go do it, right? I believe those were the exact words.
I couldn't believe you actually did it, to be honest with you. Like,
dude, you said do it.
I know, but like, I couldn't believe believe you actually did it. And, like, you and I talk every day, but I don't get a chance to say it. I'm so goddamn impressed with what you pulled off here. Like, I'm kind of in awe of it just because you did figure out how to take this amazing collection of non-fungible tokens and to build a community around that and to then create an experience that is being in the whale community, being a part of that community, and then tokenizing that experience. It's such a cool thing, Whale Shark. I mean, it's one of those things where you're like, it's an obvious thing, but it takes that X factor to be able to actually pull it off successfully. Yeah, so it's really great to be along for the journey.
I appreciate that. But again, I think it's, you know, the reason why we were able to do it, and I think you brought up the word many, many times, it's a community, right? And I think during our conversations itself, you've told me many times, hey, stop calling it a social currency and call it a community currency or community coin. And, you know, none of this would have been possible without the growth of, number one, you know, some very epic chief partners, including NFT42, Kaitza, Roll, nonfungible.com. And then after that, you know, we got an epic leadership team. And I think, once again, between the WHIP team and the Whale team, we share some of that leadership as well. You know, we have those extremely talented people who are able to rally around positive community members who really love contributing to the space. And Jim, I remember when we launched it, we weren't, you know, there was never a doubt in our mind in terms of whether will this work or not. It was, you know, we're just going to do it until it works, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And on your team, like, you have, in my opinion, the best, like, you have the best mod team in the business. I mean, you have, I think, the only fully staffed paid mod team in NFT land, as far as I know. I mean, there might be some projects that have, like, a community manager or a paid position or something like that. I mean, we actually just hired Sandy Meows this week to help us with our core communities. But dude, you have Allegria is just amazing. What a great dude. And then Odin and all the others, like Rude Moose and everybody, Tweety, they're all just such great people and knowledgeable about the space. I mean, I spend probably, I'd say 20% of my Discord time in your whale panel. It's just, you know, one of the destinations that I find myself drawn to on a daily basis where there's high quality conversation about NFTs happening. I switch my time between punks, whales, and Twitter, and Avastars, and Token Smart, and a couple other smaller communities that I'm a part of. But I really do. I mean, the whale the community conversation in whale is active and intelligent and informative. They usually learn things or about the projects in there. So it's really been great being a part of that community. Well,
yeah, let me pull this thread a little bit, like, because I'm genuinely interested yo, what's up, dude? yeah, welcome to my podcast. Genuinely interested in, like, what's going on behind the curtain of the Whale Community Skunkworks, because I am familiar with what's going on behind the NFT 42 curtain and everything, obviously. But, you know, I watch what you guys got going on in Discord, and I feel like you got a new project, scheme, giveaway, event, like, on a daily basis. So genuinely curious, like, who's calling the shots, or is it like a collaborative effort, or like, how, you know, I would assume probably incorrectly, because obviously your stuff is pretty well organized, but it seems like very unwieldy to be able to have all of these things in motion constantly. So pull the curtain back, man. How are things going on the back end of things, and who's, like, coming up with all these ideas? Is this, like, you know, all your brainchild that people are executing? Or, you know, how's it working out?
Bro, I wish I could say, you know, that I was the inventor of all of these. But the very fact is that, you know, I don't have that much brain capacity. Essentially, what's happening here, I mean, let me take it from several principal standpoints. Oh, dude, I'm going to bullet point you again.
Yes, dude.
I'm going to bullet point you
right
again.
If you didn't start bullet pointing me. I assume there will be three.
I will make sure that there's three, if not five. Never four. So, I mean, right, the very first point is that it's the construction of the team, right? So the reason why Whale is able to have generated this amount of community involvement is because we've been extremely picky about who we allow into Team Whale. You know, do they share the same values? Do they share the same philosophies? Do they share the same vision that we have as a team to move forward? And I think it's probably extremely the same as NFT42 or WHIP. You know, you're looking for that core team that will continue to not only keep core team members within that group, but also attract like-minded people into the team. So as you grow out, whether you grow out vertically or horizontally, you have people who share that same vision. So behind the scenes, I think that's really one of the first things that we do here. The second thing is, you know, I have a very, very strong leadership team in the Chief Partners. I don't think, Jim, I don't think there's a single day that I don't speak with you in Ikaita, right? I think every single morning it's morning, bro, right?
Yeah, we at least change niceties every day.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to the role guys every day. I talk to the non-fungible guys, once every few days. And, you know, they're really the sounding board for a lot of the ideas that come across. Those chats are really where I say, hey, this idea came from me or this idea came from the community. What do you think? Do you think it's going to work? You know, is there anything that the Chief Partners can do to support it? And, you know, they're all four parties are always extremely supportive of whatever we try, right? And then after that, the third thing, opening up the curtain is, you know, all of these ideas are either filtering in from the ModKitty team, the advocate team, myself, or any of the Chief Partners, right? So we don't really ever write anything off the board. If something is just ridiculous, we'll go through the logic, we'll have a very direct but very mutually respectful communication in terms of understanding why this will work or why this doesn't. But, you know, if it has a 50-60% chance of succeeding, we'll try it, right? And hey, if it works, then that's great. If it doesn't work, then we'll shelve it for a while and bring it back again. Good example would be Whale Kids, right? Fantastic idea. Hey, why don't we develop a channel and a program specifically geared towards the children of our members so that they can do art, they can get rewarded for it by Whale so that they can grow a college fund, and at the same time, they can mint their art pieces so that it can go on the blockchain. Now, while it was a fantastic idea, back then, you know, we didn't have the members or the leadership to be able to drive that program. Fast forward 2 months after we shelved Whale Kids for 2 months, we had Anissa, we had Rude Moose come on board and say, hey, this is something really that we feel really passionate about. We want to take it and do it. Can we revive it? And, you know, my response to that is always, if you're passionate about something, I'm going to say, hell yeah. So really, you know, just making sure you have a really good core team. Number two, making sure that, you know, I have a lot of good sounding boards, right? Jim and I don't always agree on everything. And, you know, sometimes, very much often, I'm wrong. Sometimes Jim is wrong. Kaitza is never wrong. It's true, dude. It's true, dude.
What a good thing, though. He's a good shit.
Yeah,
no, you're absolutely right. Did you have more to say on that?
No. I bullet pointed the shit out of Rizzo in that last one. You're good to go.
So there's three, man. I was counting.
I think one of the things too that both NFT42 and Whale are doing that maybe others are doing too, but I'm not as close to those things, so I can't speak to it as directly. But we're hiring and pulling in people from within the community. We're not looking outside to bring people in this point in time, and so we get a better we get people who are already plugged in and engaged and already hooked, and we're just actually providing them with drug, right? We're giving them an opportunity to do this all day long. And I think that when you match work with pleasure and everything else, do what you love, and you'll never feel like you're working another day in your life. Like, I think that's kind of what the cultures that we're able to build in these organizations. It's hard work. We work our asses off, don't we, Rizal? And the The Whale team does too, and Whale Shark probably works harder than anybody else. But we're having fun too, right? We're able to do what we love, and the people that are working with us are able to do what they love. And I think that makes for people who care more about their jobs or better results as a result of them caring. And we're able to attract talent that self-selects. I've read some studies and Harvard Business Reviews and stuff on talent that self-selects and stuff, and there's upsides and downsides to both. But I really like people coming and telling me that they are interested in working with us and finding out if there's a fit and hiring from within the community. I want Avastar's collectors to be our community managers and project leads and product owners and things like that. I'm not really looking for someone who I have to explain what an NFT is to do it. Even if they're slightly better at the job, I want someone who's passionate about what they're doing, and that's just the culture I want to build. I want people who want to do what they're so, and I think that Whale's really 100% that as well. So I think that's something, I don't know if it's totally unique, but I think it's a common thread that we're both doing right, in my opinion, is like hiring the community and empowering.
No, I feel like that's why there's such, I was just co-signing on that, man. I feel like that's why there's such like great overlap between Token Smart, the Whip community, the Whale community, because everyone sort of has the same, like, overarching vision. Everyone is extremely passionate. Passion is palpable when you talk to any of the people who are working hard on any of our teams and everything. So I am also, like, very on board with that philosophy. Curious to know what you guys think. I mean, I feel like we can all agree, basically, like 2.5 weeks ago, like the rocket took off and seems like it's about to bust right into orbit right now. Did y'all pull some like whale lever, like behind the scenes or something like that? Or like what would you guys attribute like this sudden, you know, exponential growth of the space to?
I think it was a sequence of events that led to a perfect storm. And to me, it started with the DeFi run, whenever, you know, Wifey and all that kind of stuff came out, and that the farming came on strong. All of a sudden, you have all these farming things. So there was a bunch of wealth creation that happened a couple months ago around all this. And the theory then, before any other things happened, was that wealth would hopefully find its way back into NFTs, right? And then, so the farming stuff went on for a while. You got the NFT folks kind of unable to ignore it, and so you have NFT folks trickling over into the DeFi a little bit more. You've got people like Gabby, who works for Battle Racers, who's like straddles both DeFi and NFTs and things like that, and a few other key players that straddle both. And then Rari hit, and then it's, you know, Whale and Rari both play their part here. Whale hit and started bringing on some attention, and it's a social currency. There weren't a ton of other social currencies at the time. It's evolved into this community currency, which wasn't really a phrase back then, but the time it was a social token, and so that was starting to get more people's attention because you've got the DeFi part coming into NFTs, and then you have Rari that launches their governance token, which, you know, we already have a bonfire going now with the DeFi and Wifey gains and Whale, but then you've got the Rari gang, and then sorry, that goes out of my head every time I think about Rarible. Rari gang, so anyways. They're literally subsidizing the community to work to use their marketplace, right? So right now, no matter how bad their interface is, like, they have said, we will give you somewhere between 10 and 100%, depending on volume for the week, of the amount of money that you spend in sales, we'll give that back to you at the end of the week, right? So if you go buy something off of Rarible versus off of OpenSea right now, for the same price, it costs you significantly more on OpenSea. So that... I'm pointing out the mechanism there that actually causes people to go use Rarible and everything else, and it's brilliant on their part that they've done it. I hope they get the interface correct now that they've brought everybody over there. But so then you had those things happening, and then the last little bit, the right click and save here the last couple of weeks, is the Bitcoiners discovering NFT space. And I guess that's the part where I don't know how that part happened, but I know those things up to it that I just described played a part in where we are today and why things are going nuts. Whale Shark, do you have any ideas on how that last part happened?
I mean, I love that narrative.
It's like you pulled the whale lever, Jim.
We're going back. You had it. You nailed it before we even started, didn't we, Rizzle?
No, I think that narrative is spot on, dude. I mean, if we're looking at a sequence of events that led us to now the fledgling, again, I think this is still the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, you know, recommending is the way I put it.
Dude, absolutely. I don't even, I think it might be in bottom of the first inning, right? It's just really, really early. You know, we knew, I think all three of us knew that we were extremely early in the space. I mean, back in December, listening to my first, You Deserve a Drink, with Matt and Rizzle. And then at that meeting, Jim, I think you and I met in December or January, last year, right? You know, back then we thought it was really early. And, you know, when we had our discussions, we were saying, hey, maybe next year, maybe 2021, maybe 2022, right? And remember having that conversation about saying, you know, 3 years ago, no one would get DeFi the time of the day. And, you know, that was where we were last year, right? And now, right now, everybody wants a piece of NFTs. You know, I don't think there's much I can add to the narrative that Jim has provided. But from a philosophical standpoint, I think that the growth of NFTs was inevitable, right? It was inevitable. You know, cryptocurrency is better money. DeFi is better financial services. NFTs is a necessary digital revolution for digital ownership, right?
Necessary is the right word. It's like a requirement. Like, we need it, or it doesn't work.
Yeah.
We've been actually, like, living in a broken digital world for the last 20 years.
Correct. So that's why and I know this does raise a lot of eyebrows whenever I say it or whenever I write it down, but, you know, I always write NFT is more than DeFi is more than cryptocurrency, right? Even being, and Gymnosis, myself being a large cryptocurrency holder myself, I probably hold more cryptocurrency than I do fiat. The use case of the blockchain in terms of digital ownership is a necessary revolution versus a better revolution, right? So, you know, that would be my philosophical standpoint on it. I have no idea how it ran so quickly. I do not have a whale lever or a whale blue button next to my computer that I can just keep pressing, and after that you see money coming into the space.
Go back behind the curtain.
Wish I did. But, you know, I think it's because of the necessity, right? It's all driven by the necessity.
Dude, I agree with you. And actually, I really feel like the flood of like the right-click save people coming into this space is a tremendously healthy thing, because you've got a whole lot of fresh faces, you know, looking at this and, you know, trying to understand it. And I forget what the progression is of like the classic like saying. It's like first they discount you, and then they hate on you, and then they like, you know, eventually come around or whatever. And I feel like we've entered another like swing of that sort of mentality where we've got a flood of people coming in. It just baffles my mind how people like who fundamentally understand crypto like can't wrap their heads around like why this is, you know, groundbreaking technology and why we have to like hold so many hands with people who are essentially crypto native and have been for a while. And, you know, anyone who was around in the beginning of, you know, the Bitcoin Ethereum era remembers like essentially the same type of conversations happening, just involving crypto itself. So it's weird to sort of have it come full circle and be back with like having to handhold people. But I do feel like it's a healthy thing, right?
No, it's absolutely healthy. But I honestly don't understand the other side of the right click and save argument, right?
No, it as well.
I don't understand it. So what? I can go and take a picture of the Mona Lisa, but I don't own the Mona Lisa, right?
Yeah, digital image.
That's pretty much it.
Because you can get the original digital image. So the problem here is that they don't understand that wifey stuff, all the DeFi gains. These Bitcoiners were a little bit involved in that. They also, Bitcoiners missed out on DeFi for a large part as well. So they've just been sitting there talking about their $100,000 coin, it's like 10K, and standing there stagnant. And there's no like DeFi or like there's nothing really going on the Bitcoin blockchain except for Bitcoin, right? Like that's what they do. We've got all this other cool shit going on. So finally, like they missed the DeFi craze, and then like the DeFi folks are now starting to move into NFTs to park their cash and their sick gains. And like I think the Bitcoiners like just don't want to miss out on like this next thing. So the DeFi thing and the wifey thing worked out really well for those DeFi bros, right? So they're coming over here and they're like, you know, let me see this thing. And they're like, NFTs, oh, you're buying pictures of things on the internet. What a horrible thing. And if you knew anything about blockchain, then you would understand immediately that securing a digital asset against the digital ledger that is distributed is just like this fucking cool thing. But apparently, Bitcoiners don't know jack shit about distributed ledger technology. Like, not a goddamn thing. They can't fucking understand that you can prove cryptographically that you own an image and that there's value in that and that you can go and resell it. And I think it's fucking dumb and it's a bad look for Bitcoiners and Bitcoiner maximalists. It shows that they don't actually know shit about blockchain. Maybe they know about Bitcoin and whatever it is they want to know about Bitcoin, but they're fucking dumb when it comes to digital ledger technology. And I know that there's exceptions to that, but seriously, the Twitter trolls that have like 20 and 50 and 100,000 followers that are Bitcoiner and Bitcoiner maxis and all this shit, they are literally dumb if they don't understand what it is we're doing here with NFTs. And it is they're going to have a really hard time in the future if they're like having trouble with the right click and see. I don't know. Anyways, man,
there we go.
It's true. Seriously, though, like, look, I understand some of it's for attention and everything else. Believe me, I know how to get attention by, like, kicking up some dust. But, like, you know, this is dumb when you can't understand the value of securing a digital asset against a blockchain if you've been in Bitcoin since 2013. You know what? If you've been in Bitcoin since 2013 and you don't understand this shit yet, then you're just fucking dumb. Like, seriously, you're dumb. You've had eight years to understand this stuff. And now you need people who have been in this space for less than 3 years to explain it to you? Like, who's OG? You know, the guy who did it in 2013 and doesn't understand what's going on in 2020, or the guy who entered in 2017 and can fucking eat your lunch with blockchain technology all day long? So
there you go. Wouldn't be a podcast with Jim without a Jim Rant. That's awesome.
Yeah. So come at me, Bitcoiners. Right, BNC, you know, dumb shit. Like, come at me with, well, like, dude, what's better about Bitcoin than what's better about what we're doing over here with smart contracts and NFTs and everything else? What's better? It's a slower network. It's inferior as far as, like, transactions per second. It's inferior as far as efficiency. It's, like, one of the least efficient ways to actually, like, create money and create value. And, like, it's completely irresponsible when we think about our environment and the costs and everything else. And you guys are sitting over here with this superiority complex saying that your coin's going to be worth $100,000. Just because you're first through the gate doesn't mean you're going to fucking win. Everybody gets to go to school on what you've done up until the point that they enter the race. So, you know, Ethereum is superior, and Flow and whatever other new blockchain come out in the future, they're going to be superior to the ones that came before them. Newsflash. Bitcoin might be OG. Someday people might decide that they want to, like, you know, buy some Bitcoin as a store of value. But my guess is they won't, because there will be better places to put their money. Like, you know, that's that. Anyways.
I have several thoughts on that, actually.
Okay.
I have several thoughts on that. So, you know, once again, you guys, both of you guys know that I was a Bitcoin OG, right? Entering the space in 2012, buying my first Bitcoin, then after that, spending half of my salary every single month to actually buy Bitcoin, you know, hitting 2015, and then realizing that, you know, the blockchain is not just about a store of value, but it's about programmable money, right? It's about smart contracts. It's about being able to do more, which is why I took all of that money and I went into Ethereum instead. Once again, looking back, you know, I think I did the calculations before. I would have made out 10,000% if I had kept Bitcoin, but instead I made out like a bandit with 30,000% on Ethereum, right? So, you know, I think maximalism by itself, you know, it always does restrict a lot of earning potential, right? I mean, you know, one of the more popular tweets that I released recently, I think a month or two back, was, remember when fiat shit on crypto, and then when crypto shit on DeFi, and then when DeFi shit on NFTs? You know, I said, when are we gonna learn not to shit on the next new thing, right? Seeing some of the Twitter guys who are shitting on NFTs, the DeFi guys shitting on NFTs a few weeks ago, now saying, hey, why don't you buy some meme? You know, once again, I reserve my opinion on meme, but, right? Yeah. So I think the first thing is that maximalism doesn't...
Yeah, go ahead. Real quick, you know, they're creating like shitty NFTs, and that's what meme gets you. Like, can you imagine if like those people who are like investing in that shit, like actually realized like where the good NFTs were? Like, anyway, go ahead.
You know, one of the things that, and sorry, just segueing, I mean, you know, one of the things that people need to understand, and that this is to your point, Jim, is that the nature of NFTs are that they are non-fungible. Not every single token is equal to the next one. Not every single art piece is going to be equal to another art piece, which is why another theme that I brought up very often within the space is there's going to be tastemakers and there's going to be loss makers, right? Yeah. I haven't had quite a strong response to that yet. But, you know, not everyone. So before in crypto,
I want us to spend a few minutes talking about our favorite artists and common artists that we enjoy. And like, I think that you and I have inadvertently or inadvertently done some tastemaking. And
I think we do, yeah. Because, you know,
we recognize the talent earlier than others, and we were just there, and I think you and I helped kind of drive a little bit of that with competing as collectors as well. Like, you and I kind of fed on each other there for a few months while we were getting to know each other, and went into some pretty big bidding wars.
Dude, you and I bid on quite a lot of the same artists without even being in communication, because I think
eventually, like, I was like, man, I need to reach out to this dude.
It's, you know, so just rounding out that last point, you know, when I talk about tastemakers, you know, it falls on two points, right, Jim? So it falls on the art side, which naturally is what artists you pick, but it also falls on the project side. What project are you going to back? Because not every single project is going to make it through either. So I guess one thing that I want to stress during this podcast is that, unlike Ethereum, when I buy an ETH, I bought an ETH, and if blockchain goes boom, right? And if Ethereum goes boom, everyone who holds Ethereum is going to go up as well, right? the NFT bull run is going to be very different. It's going to be multitudes more difficult, because you're going to have to back, you're not only going to have to understand and get into NFTs, but you're also going to have to back the right project. You're going to have to back the right asset, and you're also going to,
yeah. Because right. Projects have a lot of different assets, a wide variety of assets. I mean, if you look at CryptoKitties, there's 2 million kitties. Where do you
correct
start, right?
Is every single CK holder going to go up? Pardon, go ahead.
No, absolutely not. I just wanted to throw in a little tidbit. If you're looking at entrance into CryptoKitties, Founder Kitties is the way to go. If not Founders, Gen Zero. But you're absolutely right. Like, no, most cats are worth next to nothing, right? Or like maybe $2 at the best. They have there's a DeFi protocol for called Wrapped CryptoKitties. And if there's a kitty you don't really care about, you can wrap it up into an ERC-20 and then you can go sell it in bulk on an AMM. So,
correct.
Yeah.
And dude, you and I invest in totally different projects as well, right? Yeah. You were born out of CK, and then after that you went into CryptoPunks. I know you do Autoglyphs, right? And those are three projects that I don't even touch, right? So, you know, I think number one, you know, contrary to what the market may think, there is no whale collusion in terms of driving the market. But it does so happen that you and I do have a very similar taste in art.
Yeah, we do. So let's talk about like a couple of those artists that are like, you know, we both adamantly collect, we both love. And like, we've established that we actually have different taste in art as well. Like, you like very minimalist
correct
art, and I prefer very loud art. I like really.
And I prefer Stina Jones. Shout out Stina Jones.
Hell yeah, Stina's amazing. Stina, I think we Jones all feel like good enough. Yeah, we all three like Stina. Yeah, but good is good, right? Like, and so let me just name off the ones I know for sure that like Whale Shark and I are both like basically frothing at the mouth anytime a piece drops. That would be Joy. That would be the Hack
Giant. Giant Swan.
Akeza. He's our boy too, but we really love what he does. And there's probably one or two others that I'm missing that we both absolutely just continuously collect. There's a lot of others that we collect a lot of art. Can you think of any others that I'm missing here, Whale Shark?
Let me think here. I'm quite sure that there are quite a few more.
Oh wait, Twisted Vacancy.
Twisted Vacancy is one. Yeah. Brian Brinkman is the other one, right? Yeah, I remember fighting over some Brian Brinkman illustrations with you.
Yep.
So, that was one of my favorite questions posed at a whip when we had Brinkman on, and Show was like, we got a question from the audience, and he was like, Jim would like to know, who is your favorite collector of yours, and why is his name Jim?
I love asking questions like that.
They're awesome. Yeah, and these are, again, these artists, you know, almost every single one of these artists have started to get an insane amount of traction in the space. And once again, you know, while Jim and I did collect in the beginning, you know, I think we see a lot more people coming on and saying, hey, these are some of the artists that we think are going to make it into mainstream.
Going back and forth and buying these things for a few ETH here and there, right? And then all of a sudden what happens is other people come in and decide that they like it, and then other new collectors start bidding against us. And then they end up driving the price up beyond what we've paid in the past, and then all of our art is of value.
Correct.
Yo, curious to know, like, I didn't mean to, like, transition away from this Whale Shark. If you got a follow-up.
Hey,
comment.
No worries. Please go ahead.
No, I was just genuinely curious, like, to know what you guys think is going to be the next, like, sort of domino to fall. I mean, clearly it's not going to be, like, the right-click save crowd or whatever, but I do feel like the DeFi crowd was sort of like, you know, waiting on the fence for a while, and there was some like mud slinging back and forth. But now I sort of get the vibe that our communities are somewhat integrated, or at least like understanding the value of each other's communities, and generally seem to be like playing nice at this point. But beyond that, I'm curious to know like what crowd you think, or like who's going to be the next like big target audience that's going to glom onto NFTs. Because I mean, as we both know, like it extends in so many directions between art and music and you know decentralized identity and you know tons of different things. So where do you see the next crowd coming from?
I think we're still seeing the integration of DeFi into the space. You know, just having my finger on the pulse in the Whale server, we're getting tons of DeFi people in there every single day. So I think that will continue for quite a long while. You know, once again, right click and save again. You know, there's no territorialism when it comes. There shouldn't be any territorialism when it comes to BTC versus NFT, right? So basically what you're doing is you're saying, hey, I'm going to take a money use case and pit it against an actual blockchain use case. That's kind of silly, right? So, you know, similar to what Jim said just now, I mean, I think there are going to be a few extremely territorial people, you know, on the BTC side, but, you know, they're going to realize it's not really, you're not comparing apples to apples here. Or why am I comparing a cryptocurrency to a blockchain-based technology? It doesn't really make any sense. The third part that I'm really looking forward to result is the onboarding of the mainstream, right? I think we saw that Christie's is launching a auction for a Bitcoin art piece. You know, let me just, I've had a lot of people message me about it, probably thinking that I might go in. But you know, that auction is taking place later this month. It's not only a physical piece of art, there's also an NFT-based digital piece of art. And you know, we all know as the money in the space continues to grow, what we're going to see is we're going to see a huge amount of mass market enter into NFTs without knowing that they're NFTs. So, you know, shout out to Nifty Gateway, who's done it amazingly. You know, you don't even need to own cryptocurrency to buy digital art.
And look, I feel like it would be remiss here. You've been talking about, like, I think we need to also probably mention NBA Top Shot, because they've pulled off something similar where you can just go and purchase NFTs with money and with cash and not have to worry about, you know, having cryptocurrency ahead of time or anything like that.
Exactly. One of the most fluid experiences that I've ever had with any NFT project. You know, two of them. I think NBA Top Shots, and you know, you have to be a little bit more crypto educated to use it. But Sandbox and Avastars, right? Those three projects. I mean, just the purchasing and the user experience is so much more polished than what I see from many other projects in this space.
I appreciate the shout out to Avastars, but we can still do a lot better as far as making it easier for new users to understand what's going on. If you know NFTs and everything else, you're not going to have any trouble with Avastars. But if you're new to the space, then we don't do nearly as good of a job as, say, like, Nifty Gateway is great. That's just, like, right now, like, the on-ramp to NFTs, right? The fiat on-ramp to NFTs. So, yeah, I do think that those projects are extremely important. And also, like, you know, I think as we're kind of winding down here, I wanted to bring up something that both you and I are doing that people may not be aware of, and that is that we both found ourselves drawn towards the Flow blockchain, and we're both kind of putting some effort and energy early on ourselves. NF42, we're running a node. We're a node runner. We've been doing that for the last couple of months in their testnet and everything else. And as they get ready to launch, we're going to be running a node. And I know you're outside of the U.S. You've been able to take place.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm not as technically proficient as Jim and team NFT42. You know, have already participated in the first lockdown of 10,000 Flow. Very well prepared to take part in the Dutch auction that's going to happen, I think, on October the 8th, right? If I'm not wrong. You know, I think, you know, again, sorry, I keep referring back to previous tweets that I've made, but you know, I think the true value of Ethereum lies in the projects that it gave birth to that are on the Ethereum chain, as well as the projects that it inspired, right? You know, from a valuation perspective, I think the true value of Ethereum is in all of these ERC-20 tokens, as well as everything, all of these projects that are built, you know, on the Ethereum blockchain, but as well as in inspired blockchains or inspired projects such as Flow. So I am a pedal to the metal on Flow. One of the things that, you know, I keep a tabs on, but I know that Jim, you know, once again, being a CKOG, you know, I'm a GUOG, right? So basically I have my eye on Immutable X as well, which I think has a different and interesting value proposition. I think you're going to see a lot of new solutions come to the forefront. Dude, Rizzle, I had just one question for you. I mean, the question that you asked us about what is the new audience coming in, you know, having managed WIP, I mean, I think you have a better finger on the pulse than any of us. What are you seeing?
You know, I feel like the art and music mainstream crowd is knocking on the door, honestly. And I every day I'm getting hit up by like different musicians, especially once we started incorporating, you know, basically pre-party music to all of our events and everything. A lot of different musicians have reached out, and especially feel like audio NFTs are like extremely in their infancy and have an extremely high ceiling that really hasn't been scratched by anybody yet. But I don't know. I feel like we're really, like, sort of going back to what you were saying, like, really scratching the surface of mainstream adoption by somebody. And I guess it, at this point, with everything, like, going to the moon, it really feels like we're on the cusp of, like, you know, Sony coming in and, like, you know, trying to dominate the market, or, like, some, like, really big player, like, finally catching on and trying to throw their weight behind some massive project. And we've seen like a little bit of that, but that, you know, I feel like the collectibles thing is absolutely going nowhere. But I feel like those two, the art has been a thing for a while, but that and music, I feel like that is really what's generating the most buzz right now, at least from my end of things. But I'm more on like the hype cycle side of things and what gets people most excited rather than what's necessarily like most practical at the moment. I wanted to ask both of you guys actually like how you see the Ethereum blockchain playing out with all of this, because, you know, obviously that's been a vehicle for people's success and also like people's destruction lately. And, you know, everyone, I feel like the buzzword is going blockchain agnostic these days. But, you know, is Ethereum, you guys feel like everyone's basically going to migrate away from that and it's unsustainable? Or do you feel like that's just going to hold its place in the ecosystem? Or going back to what Jim was saying, like, are we just like waiting for the better solution, and, you know, eventually this is going to be the dinosaur left in the dust, sort of like what you say Bitcoin is going
to
be?
To be fair, I see a evolution path for Ethereum, whereas there's not as clear of one for Bitcoin, right? Like 2.0 is at some point going to launch. We're going to continue to experience the issues we're having now with gas spikes and everything else leading up until that. And then even after the 2.0 launch, my understanding is there's still a lot of backfill. They have a lot of building that they had one day each launch, you know, mainnet, get everything back. Even just like it'll be better and more performant at the end. But I think initially it's still going to be very painful when we move to 2.0. So in my view, we have another year to 18 months, probably 2 years, where Ethereum's going to continue to experience some issues as a platform trying to keep up with demand. But I think eventually, at 2.0, I think it will be a next-gen blockchain. I think it will be the best blockchain out there at a certain point in time, right? Because there's so much work and effort and everything going behind it. And I do believe that Vitalik is a great creator, inventor. You know, I believe that they will create some good. But, like, I think for the next couple of years, we're going to see things like Flow. And who knows, maybe by that time, Flow is just so far ahead in non-fungible tokens that we just decide as a community that, like, the majority of the community decides, like, this is going to be where our NFTs live now on, right? I think non-fungible tokens use case is foundational. Kind of like going back to what Whale Shark was talking about at the beginning. Necessary to build the metaverse. You need blockchain. We need non-fungible tokens. And there's going to be many blockchains that have these non-fungible tokens, and we're going to need something more universal to exist, kind of like Uniswap, but for all currencies and everything else, where, like, you know, you're in a metaverse experience, you're, you know, 10 years from now, you're in CryptoVoxels, and, you know, you're walking around with your avatar as your avatar, you're wearing 20 different pieces of outfit and accessories and hats and glasses and everything else, and you come across a store in Frankfurt that has, like, a very unique and special one-of-one pair of sneakers that you need to get, and you just basically click on them and say, yes, I want to buy it, and you as a user have no idea what cryptocurrency, well, you decided which cryptocurrency you were going to use. It didn't matter what the seller wanted you to use. You were able to use whatever cryptocurrency you had in your wallet to purchase those sneaks, and those sneaks might be on a completely different blockchain than every other NFT that you're currently wearing or in any of your wallet, and still is just going to work. You're going to push that button. You're going to click buy. You're going to pay your currency. You're going to get your NFT in your wallet, even though you've never done anything on that blockchain before. And the seller is going to get the coin, the exact coin that they wanted in their wallet. Just going to work. Just like the Apple things works, right? Like that is going to be, that's the future we're building, and it won't matter what blockchain we're on. It won't matter any of those things, because the technology that's going to underpin all of this is going to be built to make those experiences. That's what we're building.
So I share Jim's optimism, and, you know, Rizzo, before I move forward, you know, just I'm sure that Jim and I were thinking the same thing when you were talking about music. I don't know if you noticed, but Warner Brothers Music signed up with Flow as well. So that really could be could be the major entry, right?
There you go, man. Predicting the future.
Did a collaboration with two CryptoKitties out there that are the band uses brands. I actually bought both of them. And they actually ran an experiment, and you could buy these credit cards. Read them. You didn't do anything. Went and bought them with credit card. And they're actually autographed, so pretty cool.
So, I mean, going back to your question on where does ETH stand in all this evolution, I think, again, very similar to what the metaverse looks like. You know, blockchain is not going to be a winner-takes-all, right? You know, I've learned to reappreciate, again, the narrative of BTC, you know, being digital gold. You know, the reason why I've learned to appreciate it again is because managing through Whale, I understand now that, you know, price is a consensus among a strong community. And as long as BTC continues to have a strong community, then that narrative will continue. But once that community starts to fall apart, you'll see that value also start to fall apart. So, and then ETH, on the other hand, you know, it's really become the center of innovation for blockchain. I can't think of any other single blockchain that has done so much with blockchain technology other than Ethereum over the last few years. And part of the reason why is because of the huge amount of Solidity developers that are simply in the space, right? You invest for technological platforms, you invest where the talent is. And that talent continues to be in the Ethereum network. You know, the new improvements to the chain will provide very much well needed increases in scalability, as well as in the shift to proof of stake, which will only enhance the attractiveness of the blockchain itself. The only thing that I might disagree with many Ethereum maximalists is something that I hinted to earlier on when we were discussing True Things, is that I really do think that, unlike Bitcoin, the value of Ethereum is not going to be centralized in a single coin. The reason being is that there are so many level 2 solutions and Ethereum-inspired projects where that value is going to disperse into. Rather, you know, if you want to buy Bitcoin, then you should only buy Bitcoin, right? But if you want to buy into programmable money, and if you want to buy into smart contracts, then, you know, my only choice really isn't Ethereum, right? It could be Flow, which was inspired by the Ethereum network, right? Given that they did create NFTs, it could be into Immutable X, which is a layer 2 solution. It could be taking that value and investing it in Uni, right? So in Uniswap, because, you know, once again, this is a solution built on top of Ethereum that will allow people to trade in a decentralized manner. So I do think that there's still room for growth for Bitcoin, for Ethereum, you know, and for all of these other projects. But if I was looking to capture the most amount of investor value, I would be looking at blockchains such as Flow or other solutions built on the Ethereum network that might have a larger price escalation space than Ethereum itself.
Yo, did you guys grow up collecting physical things? And if so, I'm curious to know what. And the reason I ask is because what you just said, Whale Shark, about Warner Music. That's amazing news to me, because I'm someone who, like, as a teenager, spent, like, every single cent that I earned in every shitty job that I had on, like, CDs and my music collection. And when MP3s and, like, digital music really took off, it was sort of crushing in the sense that, like, I almost felt like I had compiled this amazing music collection that I grew up with that was essentially, like, not needed anymore. And now I could just, like, you know, go pull it up on YouTube or whatever. So the ability to, like, sort of go back to that mentality and being able to not only support, like, musicians that you appreciate, but actually feel like you have ownership of their shit instead of just, like, you know, something you randomly pull up on the internet or whatever, is very exciting to me personally, just because that's what I spent a lot of, you know, my teenage years doing, is just, like, sort of scavenger hunting for, like, you know, cool CDs that other people might not have, and then, like, swapping them with my buddies who were also sort of broke, so they would get, like, the other band CDs, and then, you know, we'd flip-flop or whatever. And that sort of, like, culture coming back is extremely exciting to me. So, yeah, just wondering what things you guys collected as
Russell, you're letting everyone know how old we are.
Dude, I have some tapes too, man. I wasn't trying to date myself too much.
Oh, dude, as long as you don't say LPs, I think we're good. or what do you call those tracks? What are those really huge ass? What are those really huge ass tapes? Not the regular tapes. A tracks? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Well, dude, before June goes, I mean, I've always collected stuff, right? You know, when I was really young, I started with trading cards. So if I was to go through a collector evolution, I used to collect Premier League stickers. So that's football for our Europeans and soccer for our Americans. After that, collected Dragon Ball Z cards, which I still continue to love. Collected Magic the Gathering. Collected CDs, very much like yourself, Rizzle. So I used to love, you know, cataloging and keeping my CD collection on my shelf in my room. That was really a sense of pride for me. Yeah, and you know, after that, you know, I never ventured into art or anything like that. And, you know, part of the reason why I did was because, you know, crypto art allowed me to do it without encountering the supposed high learning curve that many art galleries or museums have. Jim?
Yeah, so I also have always been a collector via my father, I guess. My grandfather and father had built a coin collection. My father was a kid, and they built a beautiful wood panel for the penny collection that they had, and they had nearly every penny from 1900 to the current date. And it was really cool because there was 3 years during the World War II where the pennies were actually made out of tin. They weren't made out of copper. And you'd be able to see that on this grid that they laid out. Anyways, after that, we started collecting baseball cards. My dad collected baseball cards with me and my brother and my sister. Collected some Marvel cards and eventually some Magic cards and things like that. Telling my sister she's got to go and dig out to see if we have our Magic cards. Valuable ones in there.
Worth a ton of money.
Yeah, so I'd love to find those one day. And then Legos actually is, I love music and I had CDs and all that kind of stuff. But I started collecting a lot of Legos like that. Actually in like 2010 time frame, and I've got still like, you know, a storage unit full of those things. And I eventually, it came to a point where they had gotten old enough, a few years old, where I could start reselling them. And such a pain in the ass to go on eBay and take pictures and to write up the description of the thing and then to go through the effort of pricing it and selling it and then shipping it and then making sure they got it and that they're happy and then finally, you know, being able to let go of that object once the whole process is done. And I've got like a closet full of these things. I'm like, oh, hell no, I don't want to sell all these. It's so much work. So that's where like I came across kitties and I was like, man, crypto kitties, this is neat because I can just sell them on the online marketplace. I don't have to worry about shipping. I don't have to worry about any of these other things that I have to worry about with physical goods. And that was like the magical for me. So for Legos, what happened.
No, nice, man. It seems like that's like an inherent trait in a lot of people who find themselves in this space is that they grew up collecting physical things, and this is sort of like the natural like progression of that mentality. And dude, I agree with you, man. I collected like a lot of sports cards and stuff and have a lot of things stashed in the closet that I simply don't have the time and energy to sift through and post and, you know, deal with, like, you know, customer interaction and like all this stuff. They're gonna have to sit there for like quite a while longer to accrue the value that makes it worth that amount of time for me. So yeah, man, I think we can all agree on that. Yo guys, is there anything that we need to definitely shout out or like touch on or anything we missed before we sort of tie this thing up here?
No, I think it's been an amazing conversation. Once again, you know, being able to get on the call with two of the most vocal and most, you know, most famous people in NFT land, it's really been an honor on my part, right? I mean, I know that I talk to you guys really often on Discord, but, you know, always good to hear your voices. And, you know, I think as to Jim's earlier point, really shout out to Dapper Labs and the Flow team. You know, very appreciative of what they're doing. I know that they're opening up their NBA Top Shots to the masses in a couple of days. Can't wait to see them on board so many mainstream sports fans, and, you know, really can't wait to participate more in Flow.
Awesome, man. Jim, you want to name drop any of the Bitcoin maximalists that you were like ranting about earlier, or should we just do just a blanket statement?
Well, like, you know, welcome to the beginning of irrelevance, all of them.
Love it, man.
We're about to make more money than any of you ever had and shit all over all of you. So, I mean, no, I mean, whatever. I mean, welcome to NFT land, really. I mean, seriously, like, take a step back, lose your ego. We all have them, but lose your ego. Come into the space, humble pie. You're ready to learn something new, and we'll welcome you with open arms and we'll teach you everything it is that we know. There's nothing sacred that we won't tell you. Come at us, just right click and save shit and all that. You're not going to get any love from us, and we're tough. We're going to stand up for ourselves.
Shots fired.
Shots fired. Wouldn't be right if there wasn't. Yeah. Yo, guys, it was really, really awesome to have
you. And these are better than BTC.
Huge shot fired.
Yeah.
Bazooka fired.
Wait, hold on a second. There's 21 million Bitcoin, right? And yeah, you can break it down into these million Satoshis each or whatever, but there's 21 million Bitcoin. There's billions of people in the world, right? You've already sold yourself short by not providing enough demand, enough supply for your market to meet demand, right? So Bitcoin is cooked in 10, 15 years. Yeah, it'll still be around, but NFTs are going to be everywhere in everyone's wallet. Yeah, everybody might know about BTC, but everyone's going to have a collective interest in NFTs succeeding. not everybody has a collective interest in BTC. So go ahead with your maximalist bullshit.
Dude, I really feel, and this is one of the reasons why I'm sitting here with you guys in the first place, is because I truly believe that NFTs are the most practical use, everyday use case for crypto, like, to come out of crypto yet. And it's just a matter of the rest of the world catching on. So
yeah, being an object. I mean, those are the only two things you need to account for in the system, and they're both there. Money and objects. You need money to buy the objects, and then you have the objects to sell for money. Like, it's all it is, right? So, money and objects. Sorry. It is, though. Like, money and objects. Like, we buy stuff with our money, and now we have digital stuff we can buy with our digital money. Anyways, I know I'm getting to this point.
No, man, you're preaching to the choir. I think we're all in accord on that.
Yeah.
Oh, this has been awesome. Let's tie it up. We should absolutely make a point to, like, do this every so often because it's great to catch up, you guys.
Yeah, yeah, I had so much fun today.
Yeah, Whale Shark, it's just good to just sit around and shoot the shit with you, man. I know we do it over text often, but we don't get to do this.
It's not the same, my friend. It's not the same.
Yeah. Anyways, one day, Vegas, somewhere, we're going to hang out.
Hell yeah.
All right, guys.
Right on.
Thank you so much, Rizzle. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, guys. Really, really appreciate you taking the time.
Yep.
There you go.
Later. Thank you.